questions. So, I mean, maybe we could turn the lights back on, please. Lights join us over here. Okay. That's okay. I think there's a roaming mic somewhere. Is there a roaming mic? Okay, so we've got 10 minutes for questions. Let's start with who would like to ask the first question?
So, this is probably just more of a link than a question. It's just some fairly obvious connections between Erica's presentation and Mark's, to do with Revelation, Earth, Thesis, and the kind of visualization approaches that you're taking, Erica. I mean, Mark, I'd be interested to hear from you as to, you know, how you would accommodate this kind of practice in the kind of language that you are describing. Is that possible? Does it meet some of your ideas for a sort of, you know, I'm fascinated by your proposal that we could have a kind of ontological evaluation of works of art, a work that is ontologically good. Would this kind of work meet some of those criteria?
I need to know which is the work.
It definitely opens up to a discussion of things that grow and are driven from themselves and return to the earth, and there are all those connections with earth and dirt and natural things that flower and die. But in terms of, you know, an ontological aesthetics, I'd need to know which is the work. There was one image that I saw that had three brightly coloured works projected on the wall, and I recognised that as a classic exhibition situation. And those works immediately engaged me in terms of beauty and composition and use of space. The thing that really opened up for me was when the work changed from being the observation of living creatures to a toy octopus. And, you know, part of my own stuff that I didn't mention in this talk is that, you know, something about art is its uselessness. So when it changed from being backing up the CSIRO to find out what drives a real octopus to being the observation of a toy octopus, it became art at that particular moment for me. So there's lots of stuff there that I could talk in terms of that second half of my paper, but I couldn't tell the difference between the work that was being done in the laboratory and the lab and what would be shown as art, or was there no difference?
Sorry, you obviously have misunderstood me. It is a work in progress, and so that plastic work is actually finished, and it's something I finished in 2008. And I guess what I was trying to draw comparison or parallel or show where I'm coming from, so I've actually done something which is a play on plastic objects, and that is, you're right, it is about the way we see, and it was a deliberate kind of play on science, I guess, and ready-mades. And now I'm going to draw those kind of ideas into a project about a living thing. But I suppose what I'm going to do is try and bring that element of that earlier project into something that's alive. And because it is a work in progress, I don't have a lot of the example. It's not finished, basically. Yeah, so what you're seeing is very much the early stages. In fact, you're the first people to see it. So, in that way, does that answer your question?
Yes. Okay, I think we've got Martin and then...
Yeah, I have a question for Erica. I guess it's a question about skill. You said that navigating through that space was a skill that you had to acquire. And I'm intrigued, what kind of skill is it? Is it something that you remember from the studio as a printmaker? Is it another kind of skill?
It's nothing like I've used before, because it's a science program. When I first started using it, it wasn't made for a user. And so, it's changed a lot since I first used it. And so, you know, I'm come from a very 2D background from printmaking, and when I first used this program, I'm actually a graphic designer as well, so I can use Illustrator and, you know, I can animate things. This thing was so frustrating because it was made by a scientist who'd never used Photoshop before. And, you know, you're looking at material data, so I actually had to understand my octopus as a histogram. I had to understand what that three-dimensional object was. And in fact, now that I've sort of been with this program for a while, it has become easy to use, but I'm actually now helping scientists see what they're looking at. Like, because I'm in the lab, I'll go, oh, what you're looking at is actually this, because they know what their object is, but they're not trained to see in 3D. You know, it's a training, so it's actually you get used to seeing something in a particular way. And when I first used it, I mean, maybe I'm just retarded, but I actually couldn't capture the object in space. There was no point at which you could actually realise where the bloody thing was. And it for me, it was like blowing glass. I don't know if any of you have ever blown glass before. You know, you can't touch the thing on the end of the stick because it's really hot. And so you're trying to make this shape, you know, and that's what it was like. It was like, I just want to get the bloody thing out of there and give it a shake. But it took me a while to work it out, and also because of the way it was programmed, it was really difficult. So, but they programmed it for themselves. It wasn't for an artist, so, you know.
Okay, we had a question over here.
Sorry, it's a question for Eureka as well. you obviously bombard the shit out of this poor plant with X-rays, so you mutated it. It's like X-ray is a mutagenic agent. What are you doing with the seedling after it? Are you destroying it, or is it going to grow into a mutant plant, as a comment about
they haven't lived.
Really violent intervention?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of jokes going around. Is this working? There's a lot of jokes going around about, you know, my Triffid experiments. And in fact, when we X-rayed the sunflower the other day, we were wondering, like, what the seeds would do. But it's because they're plants, they're not solid things. We're not dosing them with a large amount of radiation. So in fact, you know, the seeds are dying because we're not watering them afterwards. And you know, but the thing the CSIRO is doing is they want their plants to live after this process because they want to actually look at the stages of growth to see if they're growing. So, yeah, we survive X-rays. Yeah, I do. Yeah, they just haven't lived. I'm not very good at growing things. I mean, mung beans are really easy to grow. I'm not really a gardener.
I guess we have probably time for one more question. Anne.
Part of Erica's work as something that could fit into your notion of ontological aesthetics lead me to the question, how does the notion of medium and mediation fit into this notion of ontological aesthetics? Is there a mediation taking place or what?
Is there a mediation taking place in...
Is there a medium or a notion of medium contained within your notion of ontological aesthetics?
Question. I'm trying to think it through rather in terms of the work I was talking about, so that the thing I'm trying to think through, as I indicated at the beginning of the talk, was the idea that painting is not a fixed thing. That it actually, over a broad history from cave painting to now, has evolved what I very schematically indicate as four particular periods. So to ask whether it's still a medium is the question to be asked that I can't answer directly other than the way I said in the paper, which is that, you know, it seems to me that it's always changing and it has certain key moments where it attempts to leave behind what it has been and become something else. So for me to be able to answer that question requires a kind of, what I said before, a kind of a gobbledygook. It requires me to kind of drop this kind of language and ask for help from somewhere else to be able to talk differently, to to answer the question. So to be able to do that, I cobbled together things from Heidegger and Krauss and Stephen Melville to try and say it a different way. So it's not like being able to find a new medium, it's actually being able to let go of some of all of those prejudices we associate with easel painting. So we can use that kind of language quite easily with easel painting and sculpture on a plinth and so on, but that's just not what's happening around us anymore. So it's trying to find a new language. So that language most easily comes into existence with the word post. So it's post-painting, it's post-medium, it's post-aesthetics, which indicates we want to take something of, you know, what we understand about Greenberg and Krauss and apply it to a new situation. So, yeah, I can look at Erica's work and see a medium, and the medium seems to me very close to 3D animation, video, installation. All of those things are there, but I wouldn't want to tie them down in terms of that. I'm really interested in that idea where all the media are interfaced with each other and we can't get away from that in any possible way. We can't separate painting off from sculpture and media art. They all interface with each other, and we're forced in this age to find a language where we can articulate that. We found it very difficult this weekend because half of us here are chalk and the other half are cheese. Half of us here are water and the other half are oil. But, you know, it's there somewhere. There have been a few things said over the weekend that will kind of unlock that way of finding the interface between the two particular bodies and camps and schools that are here. I've got no idea whether that was an answer, but I enjoyed playing with it anyway.
Okay, I think we might wrap it up there. Thanks very much to the three speakers, Leon, Mark, and Eric. And could I ask you that we're just going to have a short break, so maybe 15 minutes and back here with